sitting at the table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. Protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Privacy.
Right.
Will.
Peace.
Losers.
Mean.
Men.
This is my mistake, and let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Express you. Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Focus.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solid.
Responsibility.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our new theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the UDHR. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by our co-host Mona Hill, and this week is AIDS Awareness Week. And December 1st is World AIDS Day, followed by Aboriginal AIDS Awareness Week from December 1st to December 5th. Our show today will explore HIV/AIDS from a few perspectives with our very special guest, Shatina Kahiso, who has graciously agreed to talk about her journey as a woman from Botswana, Africa, who has lived with HIV/AIDS for some time now and has dedicated her life to advocacy and education. Our second guest is our good friend Dan Lindsay, who has also dedicated his life to advocacy and educating the public about a multitude of human rights issues, such as homelessness, Indigenous rights regarding prior informed consent, and the fight against nuclear waste burial in Saskatchewan, and HIV/AIDS in the Aboriginal community. And we have a third guest, Wendy Reese. Welcome, Wendy. And Wendy is sort of following in Dan's footsteps here. And
she's just started with us at Rainbow and working in the homeless sector with the Youth Express program.
Excellent.
So this is her first week of training, and we're going to end the week here doing your show.
Oh, welcome everyone.
What better way to end the week?
Yeah.
Yeah, welcome Wendy, and welcome Shatani.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you here. Welcome back to all of our listeners. This is going to be a great show today, I believe. We're going to be educated and learn new things. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Shatani. She was affected by HIV/AIDS, and according to her bio, she is a woman who God snatched from the hands of the devil. And she's been saved and delivered to help others become free. Looks like you lived in a bit of a depression for a number of years after you lost your parents and your brother to AIDS. And Shatani began her life as an AIDS activist a year after her mother died, talking about the stigma and disease with anyone she got in touch with, especially strangers. So you were born and raised in Botswana, In Botswana is in southern Africa. And according to the bio, a country that is one of the most peaceful countries in Africa. But on the other hand, it's rated second highest country in the world with a rate of HIV/AIDS. So what do you have to add to that, Shetani?
Yes, I just want to say my journey as an activist has been fulfilling because of the losses that I have had with the losses I've had. So it's just me talking about the virus when to anybody I come in touch with. I feel, you know, really honored by it. Just the other day, because I live on Dewdney, so the other day I was just walking to go and buy a phone card. So somebody hit the horn in his car, so I just looked and I was wondering what it was all about. Well, I did see an elderly man who was trying to pick me up because of the area I live in. And I was very impatient and I got very upset, but I thought this is an opportunity to talk to him about the virus. And I just went along with him. He's asking me what I like to do. And my husband was actually sitting at home. So I told him, I said, well, you know, you need to be careful in this area. There's diseases out there. There's AIDS. And he kept on nodding, and I was really serious, and I was really rubbing it in and telling him that he needs to be careful. He told me that, because I said, well, your wife must be sitting at home if you're so busy. He told me he didn't have a wife, but, you know, I didn't believe him because I know he was trying to pick me up. But what I'm trying to say to people out in Saskatchewan is that I don't think me coming here was a mistake, because I left a country that is second highest in the world with HIV/AIDS, and all of a sudden I'm here in Saskatchewan, a place I had never heard of before, and then I find out that the HIV/AIDS rate is the highest in Canada. So there is still a lot of work, because I feel that in my country we are almost two decades ahead of Saskatchewan. Many of the knowledge that I'm noticing from people is fresh knowledge, is people thinking that you can get the virus from mosquitoes, and that was us 20 years ago, and people thinking that they don't need to be concerned about HIV/AIDS, that was us 20 years ago. So I'm just pleading with everybody to know out there that the virus is real. It's not nice to have it. It's a terrible thing to have, but you can also avoid it. It's 100% preventable. So get out there and find out more about the virus so you can be educated and to take care of yourselves.
Well, that was quite an introduction.
You can't beat that.
You can't beat that. I mean, what a golden opportunity. I'm kind of blown away by that you took that opportunity to someone who might have frightened you, but you sort of went beyond that. You were able to go beyond that and try and educate this total stranger who was trying to pick you up on the street about HIV. Is this something that's happened to you many times in your past? Or how? I mean, where did all of this start?
It's happened like different occasions. Many men I've come across in my journey where they would try to get with me, and the first thing I would do at any opportunity would tell them about the HIV/AIDS virus, and sometimes it didn't work, because the more I talked about it, the more they felt I didn't have it if I was talking about it like that. And I would always tell them, you can't just judge somebody by looking at them. You need to go for an HIV/AIDS test, and you need to see each other's results. If you really love yourself, you know, your health, you need to take care of yourself.
Have you had any negative response? Anyone get angry at you for trying to do this?
No, nobody got angry. They I think because of the atmosphere that I would be, you know, doing it, because there would be an atmosphere of somebody trying to hook up with me,
okay,
and me telling them about this. So sometimes they would just even ignore what I've said and just still, you know, find me more attractive, maybe because I'm talking about it the way I was.
Yeah, I wouldn't hesitate to think that there's a lot of attraction to someone who is self-assured and intelligent at all. You're originally from Botswana. It is the second highest incidence of HIV in the world. Why is that? What's going on in Botswana that's different?
Honestly, I would say it's the population. We're just over 1.5 million in number, and so because of the rate, it will seem higher. But as well, there's still people that are having extramarital affairs. They're, right now, where we are, I would say people have, many of the people have now embraced the disease, but it's more of, well, everybody is going to die. So some people will even meet somebody who's got the virus and they actually want to get the virus from that person because they feel that, you know, then they can suffer or be sick with that person and understand what they're going through.
It's an interesting way to express your empathy, isn't it? To actually wish to have a disease like that.
Yes.
What services are available right now? What has been available in Botswana? You know, you mentioned earlier when you were speaking about coming to Saskatchewan that you felt like we were about 20 years behind what's happening in your home country. So what is the difference?
The difference is human nature and human behavior. The difference is that now people, many people are actually going and taking advantage of the government treatment that's available and no longer just staying in their homes, wasting away and dying. The difference is that they have the knowledge of how you can get the virus. They know it's not from mosquitoes or not from a toilet seat. And the difference is the behavior of people now, more of the acceptance, but the stigma is still there, and the acceptance is more of, oh, I don't feel so bad because I won't die alone.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, you mentioned there's a lot of programs. Is the government paying for all these programs, or how are people paying for the treatments, the educational programs? How is that becoming available?
Yes, in Botswana, the government had at some point decided that there's so many people that have the virus and they wanted to save lives. So they have, when you are a citizen and you have the virus, you are entitled to the treatment over there and it's free. It's a matter of going to the clinics, waiting in line and, you know, picking up your supply. But what people are doing, they are not going in the cities or towns where they live. They will travel to the next one because they don't want others to see them and know that they're on the treatment.
I think that's pretty common, probably everywhere. I know that that happens here as well in Saskatchewan, that there are professionals who have HIV and they will travel. Maybe if they're a professional in Regina, they'll travel to Saskatoon or even to outside the province of Calgary for treatment rather than let, you know, the possibility of their people and their professional peers finding out that they have the illness.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to ask, you said if that a citizen of Botswana is entitled to this treatment and to the programming free of charge. Is there a lot of immigration? Are there people coming into the country because they know that it's free there? Is this problematic at all?
Well, the treatment would be it would be free for the citizens. The people that would be immigrating wouldn't be able to have access to the free treatment. So many of them may just fall sick, and if they don't have the money, they would just eventually die or go back to their countries where they don't have that opportunity, that their government caring for them in that manner.
And what about families who do eventually perhaps lose family members, lose the mother, lose the grandmother, and there are children left or fathers left with children and the father have to work? Does the government help in this case as well?
Yes, we do have some programs for, I think I would refer to it as like destitute.
Okay.
And they would just be to register and you know, pick up some food, you know, little groceries here, maybe some cornmeal to cook
It sounds very it does sound very incredibly progressive. Dan, did you want to jump in here and maybe talk about
I'm
the difference? You're just aching to jump in.
No, no, I've just been listening and. You know, we had the, you know, this has been going on in continental Africa for over 10 years now. And we had, I first thing that pops to mind is Bono on there with the press release with Prime Minister Martin, you know, and all the world was going to go in to get the AIDS meds into Africa. And as far as I know, you know, the billions of dollars and commitments that were committed to this, not all of it's actually made its way across.
Of course, the government changed.
Yes, all the governments change around the world and change, and then that's where we should be. You know, governments may change, but we, you know, as a Canada, as a nation that we're supposed to be, you know, just our standing in the world, we should be, you know, still living up to our commitments from prior governments.
And that's something that we were talking about earlier. That I sort of pulled this information in the last couple of days was. That Kwame Gwodo, an HIV activist from Benin, an African country, was talking about the fact that the Western nations have made big promises to African countries for help, for aid, in terms of medications and money, and it's not happening. They're not getting the money that's been promised.
Well, the photo op's over. You got the photo op, and now we're on to something new. But we're dealing with human beings and human lives. And not that I'm a conspiracy guy, but I look at this as always, you know, it's another way of colonization of the African continent. You know, we know China's in there big for the resources and stuff. And what better way to have a disease such as HIV/AIDS, you know, decimate the population so you can go in there and take over the resources. Resources, you know, the planet Earth is only so big and the resources are small. So there's, you know, foreign countries, China being a major player actually in going in after the resources in Africa, to the point where they even have, watching a whole story, they're trying to do the manifest destiny colonization of North America, like Columbus, saying that actually on the, I guess it would be the east coast of Africa, the Chinese actually landed a fleet there, I forget what country, you know, 1,500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, and actually they have the right to the continent, and they've been trying to get, they're trying to get, you know, archaeology finds and things like this on the coast, saying, well, it's really just the way Columbus discovered North America and it became a European possession, that China's trying to do that route in Africa. And it's, you know, totally ludicrous and totally wrong, because, you know, the African nations are free, independent people. And it's been more than 10 years. It's been 20 years. We've been, you know, it's just fighting. They've made the price of medications for HIV, you know, so high, to, you know, to bring them in. From what I heard, the last thing I heard, you know, you could do it for like a dollar a day.
Right.
But they don't, you know, the pharmaceutical,
well, we've got the drug,
companies won't. And that was the whole, to begin with, that was how that all happened, about all the Western governments pledging money so we could get these medications
affordable
to the people who need them for, you know, basically a dollar a day, not, you know, $180 a day, because people in Africa don't make $180 a year, some of them, let alone a day. So it's really quite, as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's bordering, we could debate it as if it's genocide. you know, genocide without moving an army.
Are HIV medications covered here in Saskatchewan for anyone who has the illness?
Yeah, they are.
So we do cover
it. And Saskatchewan, and that's why it's a big thing, because, you know, we got the highest rate in Canada right now. And, of course, it, you know, now going through the Aboriginal populations. And though I'm, you know, I'm not a doctor or anything, but, you know, talking about our health department people and the people that are working, you know, in this field, are very knowledgeable. They're very dedicated. They're very on top of this. And is saying it's not so much that we're necessarily having all these new cases. It's the, you have to look at, these are more cases that we're uncovering. The one fella was mentioning it, it's more like we're catching up.
Oh.
We're now finding out, you know, more and more people, you know, they might have been HIV for a few years, but they're just finding out now. So that's called a new case, but okay. it's an old case. Mm-hmm. But, you know, our numbers are, you know, staggering. And in the Aboriginal community,
it's
very
high. What's different about the Aboriginal community?
One, I think we, you know, with isolated reserves, especially in the north. So we have a lot of isolation. I imagine that would be the same with a lot of villages in Africa. I think poverty, all these things, when we come into health, everything comes back into poverty. You know, the haves and the have not. We know, like, I think when I was working for Healing Our Spirit in BC, and that's going back into the 90s, they were saying, you know, somebody living on the streets with HIV, their life expectancy could be 2 to 5 years. But if you had HIV and you had the money and you could buy all organic food and you had a nice house and you had heat and everything was, you know, you had no problem obtaining things, that, you know, you were going, you know, 15, 20 years.
Right.
So just on the poverty issue, it makes a difference in the outcome of the virus and the progression of the disease. Mm-hmm. One of the things that concerns me is today's youth. Is and I just learned actually a very staggering statistic was over 50% of grade 9 students believe there's a cure or a vaccine for HIV.
Right.
And that
so
scared the hell out of me.
So I can be as promiscuous as I like. If I catch it, they'll just
the
cure
other
me.
Thing about
like
that, though, but the other thing, we have made such progression in the treatment of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, not curing the disease, but to maintain and treat the virus. We have it now where people that are they cannot even find the virus in their body. It's almost like a remission. It can get that low, but it's not gone. Is you know, the young people say, well, if I get HIV, I just got to take some pills. What's
right.
the big deal?
Yeah, I noticed this a couple of years ago.
And this is where now we've gone back to where we were, like in the 80s when this virus first came out. You know, back in you know, in the 80s came out. You know, it was like you got HIV, you died. That was a death sentence.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, we had herpes, the herpes virus, and it was, oh, you just learned to live with that. But now we've gotten so, our medicines have gotten so good in treating that, we're back there again where it's like, no, this isn't a cure. This isn't, you can still get very ill and you can still develop AIDS and you can still die from this disease. So we have to come back and attack it again.
Or you can die from the complications of it, right?
Well, most of the people that I knew with HIV, a lot of them were dual diagnosed because, you know, a lot of it is very prevalent. The highest transmission rate is amongst IV drug users.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with a hep C.
Right.
So, you know, there's the other, you know, you get pneumonia, you can develop some cancers, and that's when we start getting into, you know, the AIDS end of it.
Right.
But then a lot of the people that I knew personally, they didn't die from HIV or AIDS, they died from liver failure. They died from the hep C. So, and that, does that screw our stats? You know, saying, oh, no, they didn't die from HIV, they died from something else. But it's all related, right, when we get into that. And it comes also into how you're living, you know, how you're able to live.
Right. Lifestyle is so important.
If you're homeless and you're living on the streets, you know, that's the same thing. How many people then they end up dying of pneumonia?
Exactly.
And you know, and that's what it gets written off as,
right.
and it goes off that way.
We have a couple of minutes left till the break, and I just want to do a few announcements before we leave, and then we're going to hear a special song on our break, and we'll get Dan to introduce the song after I do these announcements. What do we got, Jim? 2 minutes left?
Oh, we got lots more than that. We got three. Oh.
Three minutes. All right. I want to announce some things. This has actually been a whole week of activities in Regina regarding HIV/AIDS. And so what's left for the week is tonight, November 25th, APSS has an annual AIDS benefit at the GLCR nightclub at 2070 Broad Street. And the doors open at 7 p.m. and the show starts at 9 o'clock. Jim and I were honored to be the hosts last year to that event, and we had so much fun. So if you want to support HIV/AIDS through that venue, you're perfectly welcome to go out there. Also, next week, Thursday, December 1st, on News at Noon on CTV television, guests are including Dr. Maurice Hennink and the deputy medical health officer for the Regina Capella Health Region. He will be talking about HIV/AIDS. And also next Thursday to Friday, All Nations Hope AIDS Network and the CEO, Margaret, has been on our show. She was on last year talking about this. There'll be an HIV conference at the Ramada Hotel and Convention Center in Regina. So that's next Thursday and Friday, All Nations Hope AIDS Network for next week. And one last announcement that you'll be hearing from us until the end of next Friday is on December 10th. Amnesty International invites you to the Right for Rights event on International Human Rights Day, which is the anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And next Saturday, December 10th, that's it, next Saturday or Saturday after? We still have 2 weeks to go, don't we?
Yes, we do.
From 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. at Westminster United Church on 13th Avenue in Regina, we will be having a letter writing event and a free will potluck. We will have some entertainment, some nice quiet acoustic music, and we'll have some spoken word entertainment. And our guest speaker will be Amber Fletcher. Amber Fletcher is the recipient of the 2011 Governor General's Youth Award in commemoration of the person's case and PhD candidate at the University of Regina. So if you want more information, all you have to do is write a letter. It's free. You don't even have to pay to be there. There is a free will donation. But if you can write a letter, you can come out and you can make a difference in someone's life in any part of the globe who may be imprisoned as a political prisoner. And there's pamphlets and there's all kinds of information that you can get. We will help you learn how to write this letter.
Yep.
And we'd love to have you come out. So let's turn it over to Jim, and we're going to have a break. And do we have time for Dan to introduce this song? Because it's a very special
one. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, this song, it's a video. Actually, it's on YouTube. You can Google it. It's actually, it's only been out a couple of weeks. It's done by the youth of Thunderchild First Nation right here in Saskatchewan, and talking to some other people that I know. We're taking a pretty good guess that it's probably been about 10 years since an Aboriginal youth group has produced a video like this on the HIV/AIDS topic, and it couldn't come at a better time. It's incredible, and you guys are going to hear it, and you'll just see how incredible it is. And
okay.
Take it away, Jim.
Right after this.
Some awareness to you, but first I want to make you think. Check it.
Is love a second-hand emotion, or renewed every time our hearts are open? Our minds free, or is freedom a bittersweet illusion? But what about the moments that take our breath away? What is the world, how we understand it? All of the storms that life makes of it. What about those moments that take our breath away? What determines tomorrow, and how we see it too? Left in yesterday.
there's no cure for HIV. Not a drug has been found to overcome such a disease. New medications been developed that dramatically decrease, but not enough to eliminate the virus completely. And many people worry, thinking there is a cure. Anesthetics only numb your pain and all of the fear. Knowing death is soon to come along the road within years. Knowing you have to say goodbye, leaving the loved ones in tears. I hate to say it, but someone has to admit, it hurts me deep down inside to see my people at risk, getting sick, dying from this overrated infection. All we can do is make the effort to prevent it. Can you comprehend the message I'm sending? Take this as a lesson, don't second guess it. Life is a blessing, don't go and test it, or you'll be on the bed waiting to be sentenced.
So quick to throw your life away due to mixed emotions. Drugs strip the girl east of nose, triggered out of focus. Needles change the world around, self-injecting more than poison. Out of beach that I was promising, but it only been avoided. Pocahontas in the city theme, distracted by her choice. She was one of the prettiest girls I've seen, now she's living pointless. Protection's the only way to be, if not then life's a coin flip. Infection like an STD for an unscheduled appointment. It's best to take the safest plan, forget using an ointment. The future leader of a band who will lead us to the open. Somewhere down the line will make a stand to mend what has been broken. Take each other's hands in this fight that's never over. To clean up the dam behind, push yourself a little closer. Step in the safety line, a better mind is being sober. And this message for the youth who are only growing older. I'm only bold about the truth since our world is getting colder. Colder.
All right.
Okay, I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, I want you to do one last thing for me.
What's that?
Close your eyes. Trust me.
Yeah. Now with that in mind, let's sing one more time. Yeah.
Where's that peace of mind we see? That enlightened state we need. The hope that we all keep. Are we left with anything? So let's remember. Never forget, live by those moments, but never be left with only those moments that take our breath away. What determines tomorrow, and how we see it today?
We're back.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back to Human Rights Radio. We're here with Shatani Kasigo and with Dan Lindsay, and we are talking about HIV/AIDS and the many facets of HIV/AIDS. And Shatani, in case you weren't here, Shatani, I am sorry, I apologize.
Yeah, okay.
Shatani is from Botswana. Shatani is living in Regina, and she just sort of happened to bump into Dan Lindsay, who's been on our show in the past. It was at a meeting, was it, about HIV Awareness Week?
Yeah, the committee that's to, you know, organizing everything
right,
for these
Right, one
shoes.
Of the many committees, I'm sure.
And it was really funny because, you know, we're all from different agencies and stuff, and we're at the meeting's getting ready, and this woman walks in, and there was a seat there. I told her, have a seat, and somebody said, oh, well, you know, and where are you from? I'm not from anywhere. I'm here on my own. And I kind of looked at her, and then she said, well, you know, I phoned, you know, different, you know, schools and, you know, universities and stuff to see what was going on, because we're heading into, you know, a World AIDS Day and Awareness Week, and nobody was doing anything, and then she ended up asking around, and she got, I believe it was with Suzanne at Fort Capel Regina Health, and she said, well, come down to the meeting, and I just beamed. I went, yes, this is the type of people we need in our community, just to stand up and just start addressing these issues, whatever it is, be it homelessness or housing or HIV or whatever it is. And people have to become involved, because like homelessness, like the housing, like HIV, these will affect all of us, or at least somebody in our family at one time or another. So, you know, we better wake up and realize the issues and start dealing with the issues, or we might get a rude awakening.
Right. And Shitani, this is a passion for you. Obviously, it's a passion. If you started making phone calls to find out what you could do in the city of Regina after you moved here.
Yes. I've been here since 2009 in October. So somewhere down the road, because I was going to Fifth Avenue to some of the agencies over there, and just finding out about what they're doing and volunteering at some of the AIDS organizations over there. So one day I just thought, okay, World AIDS Day is coming up. You don't really hear so much about it in the news. You'll hear about it on that day, or, you know, a few days before, and then it goes very quiet and they're focused on other issues. So I made some phone calls. I thought I'd call the universities, SIAST and University of Regina, just to find out what it is they have on their calendar regarding HIV/AIDS, because those people at the universities are tomorrow's generation. They are the ones that will be the workforce here, and they need to be aware of that. So there was nothing on the calendars there, and I made some more phone calls. I'd been calling from morning until noon. By noontime, I was tired because I wasn't getting any breakthroughs. So I just thought I'll take a break. In the afternoon, I did get a phone call from Suzanne, and I was so excited because I eventually said, so you're the person I should be speaking with. And she said, yes. So we made an appointment. She came over to my house. We talked about HIV/AIDS. I was just concerned that I'm not seeing enough awareness about HIV/AIDS. Yet there's, you know, it's we're leading here in Saskatchewan of the virus, and nobody is nobody wants to talk about it. Where I live, I take some walks sometimes, and I do see some cars driving. You know, they'll drive around and come back again, and you know that person is trying to pick me up, but, you know, I just keep on walking, and that's my concern, is that man who's doing that is a father, he's a husband, and he's picking someone up, and, you know, I don't know how often he comes, but he's going to go back home to his trusting wife, who is faithful, probably, or vice versa. I've never seen, you know, women do that. It's mostly men that I see, you know, and that's just how the virus spreads. So with injection drug use being the number one ways that the virus is being transmitted here in Saskatchewan, my fear is that it's going to overturn, and it will be through, you know, sexual relations that it will be taking over, just because everybody is sexual in nature. You may be young, but you'll grow up to that's how God made us. It's not everybody who does drugs. So you cannot say, I don't do drugs, so I'm safe, because that person that you're going to be with, your sexual partner, has been with somebody who's been with someone who's been with someone who's done injection drug use. And they won't tell you about it, because that person you are with once you are with somebody, you're with those other people that person has been with. So that's just something you just need to to love yourself. Once you love yourself, I think that's the starting point, because then you would want to know sexually how healthy you are and go to the sexual health clinic, you know, before your relationship becomes sexual in nature. So
you're talking about being proactive here.
Yes, yes. We all do have to be proactive. We have to talk about it everywhere. The minute you sit with someone for coffee and start talking about what you like, what you don't like, and, you know, if there's a possibility that the two of you can be together, you also have to include that discussion of going to the sexual health clinic and going together and seeing each other's results. It's your life. If you don't love yourself, nobody else can love you. It has to start with you. Then you can care for other people. Then you can love other people.
So speaking of caring for other people, Shatani, as I mentioned earlier, you are from Botswana, which, for those listeners who weren't here at the top of the hour, has the second highest rate of HIV/AIDS in the world. And you've lost yourself a number of people in your family. Did you want to tell us a little bit about that and how it's affected you?
Yes. We were five. It was my parents and my older brother and my younger sister. My parents, they died of AIDS, and my brother died of AIDS too. And I'll tell you that these three people, I have my younger sister who is still living, these three people that, you know, meant so much to me and they died, it came as a shock, even though we knew that the virus was there. So it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't decide that, okay, well, you have a title to your name, so you won't get the virus. You know, my father, he came home to my mother and gave it to her. That's why I mentioned of the faithful wife who's at home and trusting her husband. You know, and they were professionals. My father was an accountant, and I never thought, we never talked about it in the house. We knew that the virus was there, but it was more towards, you know, it's far from us, but it came right inside the house. And as well, my brother died after my parents died, and I know the first thing I said to him when I saw him, because he now had fully blown AIDS, he stayed away, he hid himself from me. All I had with him was just a voice, because I would communicate with him over the telephone, and he never told me what was going on with him. He was just avoiding me. So when I did see him, the first thing I said was, how did you get this? You know, because I was just really shocked. I thought he would have learned from seeing my father. He would have learned from seeing my mother, and he got it. Then I realized he didn't get it on purpose. You know, it's not about people going out there and saying, I'm going to get it on purpose. It's just that one person or that one time, and, you know, you have it. So, yeah, you just really have to be careful out there and not think it won't come to you or it doesn't affect you. Everybody has to care.
That's a very powerful story. You've also lost cousins too, haven't you?
Yeah, I have cousins that have died. I have cousins that are living with the virus right now. I have nephews and nieces from cousins that have been born with the virus. They are still living, and some of them are almost 16 at dating ages, where they haven't been told, you know, what happened to your mother. And if they're going to have girlfriends and start, you know, sleeping with them, and they don't know what happened to their mothers, they know that the virus is there, but it's a vicious cycle. I mean, that it's just spreading in all kinds of areas, all kinds of ways.
We talked earlier about the fact that the government of Botswana is funding treatment for people.
Yes.
And there are programs available. And then I wanted to connect that to the young people who are born with the virus and, you know, turning 16. Are there education programs in the schools? Are there intervention programs to teach the young people about this as well? Or how far is the government going with their funding?
There are some it's part of the school system to teach about HIV/AIDS, and it's done at the primary school level. So we'll get nurses would come and completely open. There's no sugar coating of anything. So many of the children, they are fully aware of how you get the virus. It's the human behavior that where the challenge comes in.
Young people think that they're immune to everything. I think, and it's not just young people, but
and we think if we just it's like the drug thing, just yeah. say no that they're not going to do it.
Right,
as you're saying, it's human nature.
Yeah,
we've been doing this since for 50,000 years, and we're going to continue to do it. So we have to approach it a little more.
Well, it does sound to me like Botswana has become an incredibly forward-thinking country, the government, in terms of this particular issue.
Yes, and that's why I've mentioned that I feel that we are 2 decades ahead.
Of Saskatchewan.
Yes, because a lot of what I'm seeing right now was what I saw back then as a young girl growing up.
If you had an opportunity to talk to our leaders, or even Prime Minister Stephen Harper, mm-hmm. About your knowledge of HIV/AIDS and the way that your home country is working with their citizens, what advice would you give to the leaders of our country or our province here?
The advice I would give would be as a leader, because many people look up to a leader, would be to be the ones that are leading ahead of everybody, ahead of the pack regarding some of these issues. So I would just advise for more involvement. I know people are busy. I know there's many other issues, but even just sending a representative to take over that task, you know, rather than not have anybody. But it's just for you as a leader to just, you know, lead the pack, lead the way, talk about it. Even in the offices, this is something at the workplace, at schools, everywhere. It needs to be talked about. You're sitting in a park with a stranger, talk about it and, you know, get more people involved rather than, because it's I know it's a sad thing. I know it sounds like it's doom and gloom. And I've said before that disasters and diseases, natural disasters and diseases are never communicated with excitement. It's always with gloom. But this affects everybody's life, and it affects every leader's life because nobody is immune. HIV doesn't care about it. It doesn't discriminate. So it's to lead the pack. When I say the pack, I'm referring to everybody else, so that young children growing up can look up to our leaders as well.
Thank you. I think that's really good advice. Now that we're talking about leadership, one of the things I'd like to get to is you know, information about the fact that oftentimes leadership bases their decisions on helping other countries financially on their own ideologies from within the context of their politics, right? You mentioned that in Botswana, currently abortion is illegal.
Yes.
And in other countries, that's the case. It's not in the United States and it's not in Canada. And we talked a little bit earlier about the fact that not a lot of the money that was promised in the past 5 or 10 years is actually getting to countries where the HIV rate is high, and there's not a lot of money to help people out with this. And, you know, the concept of ideology and the American government, for instance, and I'm just using this as an example because this is pretty well-known knowledge, that once the Bush administration took power, a lot of money that had been promised for sexual health issues to other countries was pulled back. If the ideology of maybe a clinic, for instance, maybe they provided abortions, did not jive or did not match the ideology of the giving country. And this happened quite often where clinics in specific countries would not be given money to work with women's health there because the ideology didn't match. And the information I found is that, let's see, I'm looking for it here, my international HIV/AIDS funding, particularly that from the U.S., has been controversial for allowing ideology to trump science, because HIV is all about science, right? This is about medical science. And such as funding abstinence programs and ignoring some populations. So the concept of funding abstinence programs, or even in the the Catholic Church, for instance, with the Pope not getting behind the concept of using condoms, right, but just say no to sex. And you talked about the fact that young people are going to have sex. I mean, we're all humans, and we are going to have sex regardless of what diseases are out there. So that, for me, is very frustrating, extremely frustrating, that the money would not be available, that there are pockets of groups of people who are not willing to help because the people that need the help, their ideology does not match with the money that's available.
But is that not going back a form of genocide, as far as I'm concerned? You play ball my way, then you can get access to these drugs or these funding, and if you don't, then you don't get it. And this is where, you know, and the whole idea of the United Nations, when we put together United Nations and the World Health Organization, was to be the key players in this. So they should have control over the money and where that money's going, regardless of politics. So that's, you know, going back to, you know, even what, you know, one of the takes in Africa about the resources from foreign nationals, be it politics or be it on resources or be it based on religion. These go back again to human rights issues. And, you know, these drugs should be supplied by the countries that have the resources to supply them to the countries that don't have the resources, regardless of politics,
right,
or race,
religion.
Or religion.
Right.
Or does that country actually have resources or doesn't have none?
Right.
You know, we base things, we'll help a country. If it's got oil, boy, we're in there helping them out 100 times. If it got no oil, well, you don't get nothing from us. You know, that goes right into the peacekeeping in Africa and many states, Somalia, all these other countries. So,
right.
You know, look at what we've done in Iraq and Iran and, you know, the whole Middle East compared to what we've done in Africa in the name of, I'm not sure, it all comes down to, as far as I'm concerned, resources.
And on that note, we have a couple of minutes left before we leave, so I would like to maybe bring up some good news. And the good news, well, first of all, is that Shetani Kagiso has come to Saskatchewan, and I think it's a wonderful thing.
I think she's going to be a force to reckon
a
with.
We're
very lucky to have her here,
yes,
in Regina.
Thank you so much for your time, for your personal story, for your passion, and for your advice to our leaders. And the other good news is that, you know, despite the fact that I brought up this issue of the Bush administration withholding money, in May, the Obama administration announced changes. The official Office of the U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator released new guidance for the massive U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. It's a U.S. $48 billion program started by George Bush. There are changes made to it, so I think that money is going to be more available now. Also, Netherlands has announced a massive world-first program so that gay men, people who use drugs, and sex workers in 16 countries can get easier access to information, condoms, antiretroviral treatment, and care.
And if I can just add, like right here in Regina, we have APSS, AIDS Program South Saskatchewan, All Nations Hope AIDS Network, Carmichael Outreach, SWAP, which is a Street Workers Advocacy Network, Planned Parenthood Regina. Right here, that if you have any questions on this, these people are top-notch. They're right,
right
here. They're out in force. And I got to just tell you all, real quick, you know, our health teams that are here, we have a top-notch crack team that is out and about, and we're going to be able to beat this.
Excellent. Wonderful show. Thank you both for being on the show.
Thank you for having me on the show.
And we'll get you back, trust me. Take it away, Jim.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Every day and every moment in every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. To paraphrase a great humanitarian, if you can't help everybody, just help one. And whether the abuses stop immediately or take a long time to end, the gift of your attention and intervention can make a profound and positive impact on the ability of individuals and communities to endure and prevail. For info on past and upcoming shows, with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."